Okay, did everybody get a message that it's being recorded?
Yep.
Hello? Okay, great. All right, so we have Marta.
Hello.
And Scott. Who else do we have on the phone?
Joe?
Joe Whitty?
Yeah.
And Marion Grogan?
Hi, Marion.
Hi.
So how is everybody? Where is it that it's so cold and rainy? That must be Colorado.
It's Colorado. We're not used to this. Well, actually, we are. But, no. It's been the most glorious Indian summer, likely thanks to climate change. But
mm-hmm.
It's been really nice.
I was talking to somebody earlier in Colorado who said that it's just been rainy and unusually rainy.
It has been, you know, and it's really bizarre because a lot of people think, well, the drought's over, and for some creatures it is, but for the farmers, I don't know if you know about this, about the, it's kind of like phenology, except it's not,
mm-hmm.
but where the even though it's snowed a lot more this last spring than normal, it because of the temperatures rising, the snow is melting sooner than the farmers can use it for irrigation. So essentially, they're still experiencing a drought. It's very interesting disconnect. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so now that the chimes are for announcing people coming in and out, I'm going to ask if anybody else has called in. I have Marta, Scott, Joe, and Marion.
This
Laura
is
Keisler.
David
Laura.
Weinstein.
And David, great. So the disadvantage of not having the announcements is that I don't know when more people are calling in, but we won't have the interruptions we've had before, which have been very annoying. So, so I'm going to start by asking if there are any announcements of ongoing activities or things people would like to ask of a group.
Yeah, hi, this is David Blackstein, and I think many people know that next Thursday and Friday, the National Academy of Sciences Roundtable on Climate Change Education that Tamara and I are each members
mm-hmm.
of is going to have a two-day workshop here in D.C. on climate change education for the public, and it's an open meeting, so anybody who is in D.C. or who can get there to the Commerce Building is welcome to come. There will be, we go from about, what time do we start? About 9 o'clock on Thursday the 21st and end mid-afternoon on Friday the 22nd. Or about 3:30, so I guess it's late afternoon, and we're going to be looking in three sessions. First is going to be looking at the goals of climate change education. What are the different groups? What are they doing? What are their goals? And Frank Niepold will be one of the lead speakers in that session, giving just a five-minute overview of the fundamental principles and what the context of the principles is, how they relate to public education. And then there'll be a session on mapping climate change education goals and outcomes to various audiences. And the feature there will be the Six Americas study. And Anthony Leiserwitz from Yale is going to be the lead speaker at that session. And then the third is looking at what are the implications of what we know about audience segmentation and strategies, and what are the various approaches that can be and should be used for public climate change education. And in each one of these, the there will be a combination of plenaries and 90-minute breakout sessions where we hope to develop ideas as to what we should really do to move things forward.
This is Marta. Do you have something that you could email me? Because I would love to get this out to the Washington-based arts associations.
Yeah, I can send it, save the date now, and I don't think, Tamara, have you seen the agenda yet?
No, I haven't. And I was going to ask you, do you know whether or not, as last time, it was available for people on teleconference?
I think they're working on that. I'm not positive.
Okay.
And I asked whether you'd seen the agenda, because I'm on the planning committee for this thing. And I've seen so many versions of the agenda that I don't actually know
whether it's gone to the full roundtable
or not. Okay, well,
I don't believe I have, but I've been meaning to sort of try to catch up on where things are with it.
All right, yeah. Well, so I think each day, the answer is, we're about to send this out, and of course everybody has, their last edit. So, I will send out the save the date to the listserv, and
why don't you do that?
We get an agenda, I'll send that out.
David, this is Scott Carley. I just wanted to mention, I actually have on the event schedule for the Climate Literacy Network, I put the link to the National Academy's website. I just checked it now, and it still says the agenda is coming soon, so it's actually not up on the website.
Okay, we have a couple of conference calls tomorrow, and that has to be the end of it, because we have to get this thing out.
I would think so. Anyway, thank you.
Yes, so just so everybody knows, what Scott was referring to is the Climate Literacy Network website, where if you got Marta's slides, they're on the teleconference schedule, but a menu item on the left would be events, and it's listed there. So you could, David, if you can still send out that link
it
has fuller access, but it is on the website under events so that you can click on it there also.
Thank you.
Are there any other announcements? One thing I'd like everybody to know is that the Clean Pathway Project is on track to be formally live on November 1st, so we're really excited about that.
Okay, great.
Maybe we'll walk people through some of it once it is live for everybody to see.
And tomorrow, this is Caroline Lewis. Next week, I believe, is the Climate Change Education Workshop, the Roundtable in D.C., and I will be there.
Okay, but David Blockstein was just talking about that.
I'm sorry, I just joined.
That's fine, no problem.
Glad to have you, yeah. Right now there are about 150, about 150 people are either registered or expected.
Well, let's not take up your time, but who from this group is going so I can look for you?
Well, Tamara's going and David's going.
Yeah, and Frank Niepold will be there.
Frank Niepold will be there. He's not on the calls all the time, but he'll be there also.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay, are there any, so let's see, I'm just going to go through the names again, and so anybody else who's called in can speak up. I have Marta, Scott, Joe, Marion, Laura, David, and Caroline.
Karen Holweg's here.
Hi, Karen.
Doug Cohen.
Hi, Doug. Okay, with that then, I will turn it over to Marta. She's our speaker today on communicating climate science, cognition plus affect equals effect. So Marta, if you want to go ahead and start by introducing who you are and your background a bit, and then go on with your talk. Everybody, you can get to Marta's slides through the website. The link to a slideshow is there. So, does everybody have access to the slides?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So, Marta, you want to go ahead?
Sure. So, thanks everybody for letting me do this. And my background, I'll talk a little bit about it in the presentation, but just very briefly, I work with EcoArts Connections, and which is an organization that I founded in Boulder, Colorado, and I'm the first visiting arts professional at the National Center for Atmospheric Research, where I am starting to work with scientists to help get their research out to a broader public by collaborating with the arts. So this is my very first webinar, so please tutor me as I go along if I'm not doing this right. Okay, so we've got the first sort of title slide. We're going to go on to this next slide. And
Can anybody tell me how to make it larger?
There's the bottom right corner. There's something that says full. It'll fill your screen.
Yep. Works fine.
And the first slide is a cartoon. And sometimes finding ways to communicate a topic of great urgency and importance requires a wide variety of creative approaches to be successful, from the bottom up to the top down. Next slide. This is a poster from our first festival that we did in 2006. I come to this discussion with a background in the arts, originally as a dancer, and then as director of the Colorado Dance Festival, and now as the director of Equal Arts Connections, where we bring together science, arts, and other organizations to advance understanding of climate change and sustainable solutions. And most recently, we're working with Tipping Point, which is an organization in the UK bringing together artists and scientists together to talk about climate change and sustainability. At the Colorado Dance Festival, we brought in artists from around the country and the world to perform and teach in Boulder, and our focus was on new ideas and experimentation. So two things from that experience have brought me to climate change communication. First, we had lots of interdisciplinary collaborations, and through them, I've come to think of the people in different disciplines and fields as different species, meaning scientists, artists, politicians, engineers, chefs. We all have our different ways of being and our different ways of dressing and our different acronyms and our different concepts of what's on time. And it's helpful, I've found, when working interdisciplinarily, to think about working ecosystemically, meaning the lions get to be lions, the bears get to be bears, and everybody does what they do best, but we do it together to achieve a common goal. More about that later. Second, at the festival, we did a three-year project called Dances of the Spirit, which explored the relationship between dance, spirituality, and the environment through different cultural worldviews. And this led me to read more and more about the environment and climate change. And I came across, next slide, this study and others like it that changed my life and work. And a lot of you may know of this study and others like it. Next slide. That asks the big question. Why is it that so many people know we're facing multiple environmental crises and hardly anybody's doing anything about it? The study observed that effective action results through a combination of cognition and affect, which is essentially your intellect and your emotions, your mind and your heart, working together. Yet most study of environmental problems is cognitive. People say, we've got a problem, let's come up with a solution. There are hundreds of solutions, but mostly they sit on shelves because there's not enough affect, not enough passion to put them into action. So the study recommended that education be more affective. Meanwhile, I noticed outside of academia that if an environmental group, and I say if with real respect to my colleagues, many are doing great work, but if an environmental work group goes charging ahead with great affect, great passion, without good science, its argument is also not as effective as it could be, because anyone who wants to can discredit it. Next slide. So meanwhile, I've been reading all about affect, but nobody's talking about the arts. Now, my background is the arts, and over the years, I've seen again and again the transformative power of the arts for personal and social change. Since prehistoric times, the arts have inspired deep engagement, reflection, discussion, and action, thanks to their ability to attract, involve, educate, stimulate, and motivate, and move people emotionally and physically to do what they might not otherwise have the interest or energy or courage to do. So think cave people, revving up with music and dance and paintings, people who have to go out and kill some huge creature with little more than a spear. Next slide. Think religion, that has utilized the arts to inspire followers and consider the big questions of humankind. Next slide. Think advertising, that uses the arts to persuade people to buy things they may or may not need. Next slide. Think edutainment, which is a field by itself, that uses the arts to make education more entertaining, not only for programs like Sesame Street, but also for public health programs in third world countries through such respected institutes as the Johns Hopkins Center for Communications Programs. So with my background in the arts, I sort of created EcoArts Connections with the idea of pulling together the cognitive power of science with the affective power of the arts and co-creating performances, exhibits, talks, and tours. And in that half an hour to an hour that the marketing people say you've got between when someone is deeply affected by something and they go back to their normal, everyday, stressed-out, busy lives, you offer them very simple solutions, from changing out their light bulbs to running for office to create more sustainability in their own towns. Next slide. So there's just some more research, and we have the Turk information here too, I think. Okay. So I'm sure, yeah, you guys are all familiar with this, so we'll just whip on through this. The work that we see, affect, as you probably know, has to do with emotions, feeling, experience, heart, and cognition refers to intellect, thoughts, analysis, and mind. And for us regular folk, it's common sense to think that having both our hearts and minds engaged and working together at the same time is helpful. After all, knowledge is not wisdom. It's what you do with that knowledge that's important, and that requires affective, feeling-inspired realms like ethics, compassion, creativity to join forces with facts to help people make the best decisions possible. Yet when we try to talk with each other, we often try to use cognition alone in what we call logic. But trying to attract people to sustainable solutions using logic alone is not as effective as one might think. For example, logic says that sustainable solutions are the right thing to do. Logic says if we just make people more aware, give them the facts, and increase their knowledge, they too will become saved and choose sustainability over fossil fuels. But cognition alone, knowledge and logic aren't enough. If they were, there would be no need for a diet industry, stop smoking AIDS, Alcoholics Anonymous, counselors, preachers, psychiatrists, marketers, and all manner of consultants who deal in human behavioral realms. This is sort of cool. It's a new class. I'm sure that you guys are aware of all this. But here's, fortunately, as we know, there are these various studies that have helped people to understand about this difference between, or this coming together of cognition and affect. And I'm sure you have the Six America study, so I won't go into that. But this is one of the things, are you all familiar with the Dan Kahn research, or Kahan, if that's how you say it?
No.
Yes.
So mixed. This is from an article that's called Fixing the Communications Failure, which is I highly recommend, and I can send to the group if you're not familiar with it. But it's about this research that basically says that, I call it the littermate theory, in the sense that it's whom you grew up with, who you go to work with, who you go to church, synagogue, mosque, meadow, or shopping mall with, that's really what helps to influence what you and whom you believe. And this just slide helps you to understand the kind of two different mindsets of folks and what they believe in. And emotion is really a part of this, and it's values, not logic, according to Kahn and his colleagues, that's at the crux of so many disagreements about climate change and sustainability. And it's then when people feel that their values are threatened that they dig in and disagree, no matter what the logic is. And I'm sure you know about this study, the CRED study, which is really terrific. And one of the things that I love about that is that it shows the two different information processing systems of the brain. And the numbers folks are on the left-hand side, and the pictures folks are on the right side, to be very simplistic about it. One of the things that's so helpful about the arts, I think, is that it can really pop right past the different information processing systems of the brain and also all kinds of political disagreements, and it's kind of like a stealth attack, in a way, to try to get past arguments and get to a deeper part of people's psyches. Science and the arts have a long history of overlaps, collaborations, and convenings, and being one and the same. So this prehistoric image of bison and ones like it are often considered the first science images and the first arts images. Next slide, of Leonardo da Vinci. Leonardo da Vinci, of course, was one of the most brilliant artists and scientists, or rather this is one of his images. Next slide. John James Audubon was both an ornithologist and painter. Historically speaking, the arts have helped to observe current realities and envision new worlds, which, in collaboration with good science, has tremendous potential for climate scientists. Here are some quick examples from the past. Next slide. This is an Albert Bierstadt painting of Yosemite Valley. Paintings like this one and those by George Catlin, Thomas Moran, and others, and the photography of Ansel Adams helped to convince the American people and Congress to establish the national park system. Next slide. President Lincoln nicknamed the book Uncle Tom's Cabin the little book that started the Civil War. It didn't really start the Civil War, of course. It built on the hard work of others. But what it did do was receive rave reviews, reach all classes of people, and helped Americans imagine a world without slavery and how to get there. Next slide. Songs such as We Shall Overcome have helped people maintain their conviction and strength to succeed in spite of years of oppression. Next slide. Songs like Bob Dylan and a whole host of protest singers sang in the 60s helped really to shift an entire generation of people and their thinking, and some say to help end the war in Vietnam. Next slide. Tony Kushner's award-winning Broadway play, Angels in America, helped to increase AIDS awareness and dispel prejudice against homophobia. Next slide. Bill T. Jones, who's a choreographer, his work, Still Here, inspired audiences to be more compassionate to people with life-threatening illnesses. And getting closer to home and addressing environmental concerns, next slide. Randy Newman wrote a hit song that reached the top 40s chart when the Cuyahoga River caught fire in 1969. It was his song, Burn On, Big River, Burn On, that helped to inspire the river cleanup, really, which led to the creation of the Clean Water Act and the EPA. And actually, along with that, was an award that was given by the television show Laugh-In, which is essentially theater on TV, to the the city officials of Cleveland for being so stupid that they allowed the river to catch fire because it was so polluted. Those two arts events helped to really inspire the real cleanup of the river. Next slide. Merle Eucalys did this piece called The Social Mirror, which is a garbage truck with a mirror on the side of it that drove around Manhattan. And it attracted widespread media attention to the issue of urban garbage and helped people see their own contributions in the making of New York City's trash. Next slide. Subhankar Banerjee's photos were used by Senator Barbara Boxer in the Senate to refute the claims that it was all right to drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge because it was a white wasteland where nothing grew and no one lived. Mm-hmm. As a result of Banerjee's images, which were passed around the Senate, the drilling was halted, at least for a time. Next slide. Artist Kim Abeles invented smog collectors to help draw attention to the air in Los Angeles. She cut stencils out of a special paper and places them on treated porcelain plates and then leaves them outside in the smog to catch particulates. When she cuts out one, for this particular piece, she gained international attention. She cut out one image of a president's face per plate, and depending on their environmental record, she left them out longer or shorter periods of time in the L.A. air.
Interesting.
Yeah. She's actually coming to Boulder and going to be working with scientists to create a new piece in Boulder, which I can talk about later. Next slide. Visual artist Mary Litmus was interested in the flood lines left by Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. She knew about the dangers of flash floods in Colorado, which have been exacerbated during drought, in part as a symptom of climate change. We paired her with a USGS hydrologist, Sheila Miller, and a University of Colorado geomorphologist, Pete Berkland, and together they surveyed where the flood lines would go on North Boulder Creek for the predicted 500-year flash flood. So the the dots were put on the local high school, on the city hall, this is the library, on rocks, on trees, the art museum, and in some places the dots were just a couple feet high because that's how high the water would be, and in other places it was 19 feet high. And when people walked up to it, they realized for the first time that they would actually possibly be underwater, and the city loved this piece so much because all of their visualizations were sort of a bird's eye view looking down on a floodplain and showing the lines going out horizontally, but nothing was really able to show the vertical image, and there was, in this way, with this artist's work, there was a kind of psychophysical visceral reaction of what it might be like to be underwater. Next slide. Oops, sorry, this is just another picture of Mary's piece. Next slide. This is Chris Jordan's work. This is a 5x10 photograph of 2 million plastic beverage bottles, which is the number that's used every 5 minutes in the United States. And the next slide, you can see the detail of that piece. And a lot of times when people go up to it and they think, oh, I'm so pure and I just drink water, but they can actually see their very own plastic water bottle in this mix and hopefully understand that their small contribution is a contribution to the problem, and it can also be a contribution to the solution if they stop using plastic beverage bottles. Next slide. Here's another Chris Jordan piece with actual size people next to it. It's of 30,000 reams of paper, which is the amount that's used in the U.S. every 5 minutes. Next slide. This is Christine Smock's piece. She was inspired by the interaction with a sustainabilist, Ron Larson, and readings about renewable energy, and she created what she calls Our Lady of Transformation and Renewable Energy.
Love it.
Her solar breastplates actually work to light up the LED lights in her tiara.
I love it.
Her wind turbine torch moves in the breeze, and tiny copper pipes water her biomass dress daily to keep the plants alive.
Where is she, Marta?
Right now she's in Christine's studio. We cart her out every once in a while, but I keep thinking that this would be like the perfect emblem for some kind of a, you know, campaign or something like that.
I love it.
The affective power of really excellent arts used in combination with the cognitive power of really accurate climate science is only beginning to be explored, and as such, there's little specific rigorous evaluation that can be cited. We do have anecdotal evidence that says after our 10-minute eco-plays that we've commissioned, inspired by climate scientists and educators, written by high school students, and performed by professional actors who are adults, audience members have said, quote, I've been reading about climate change for months. This is the first time I felt it personally. What can I do? End quote. Or CU Bio, University of Colorado biogeochemist Jason Neff and dancer performance artist Michelle Ellsworth team taught a class called The Art and Science of Climate. Jason, the scientist, said afterward, the students learned the science more quickly, more accurately, and more thoroughly than at any other time in my career. End quote. Next slide. So, of course, you know, here's the great benefits of collaborating with the arts in terms of climate change. Communication, we think, is, and what we found, really, is that it's really also been helpful in helping scientists have reach broader impacts and increasing their audiences and getting more people, meaning working in collaboration interdisciplinarily. Each discipline publicizes the collaboration and can bring as many as 2 to 4 times the audiences that one discipline alone might have. It typically attracts new audiences, and meaning different people, since each, both the arts and the science folks, bring their own audiences to the event. And it increases media attention because although newspapers are dying all across the country, most still have some kind of an entertainment section. Very few have a special science section. So that it's a possibility to get media attention for an issue that may not necessarily get such full play. And, of course, the science can be more accessible because these kinds of collaboration can reach both sides of the brain and the heart. Next slide. This is just some of the, we did one of our big festivals in 2007, and this is just some of the PR that we got. This is a New York Times article. The smaller picture is Mary Miss is putting up the dots, and the bigger picture is of the National Center for Atmospheric Research, which is a wind tunnel that was created by artists in collaboration with Peggy Lamone. I don't know if you know Peggy, who's an NCAR scientist. Next slide. So how do you do these art-science collaborations? Well, you have to find the artists, and if on campus, I'm sure you guys know this, but if not, you go to the arts departments, performing visual, literary, media departments, and off campus, you can go to art centers, theaters, museums, coffee shops, bars, all kinds of folks. You want it, when you come, you want it to, we found that it's really helpful to bring questions rather than answers, and to explore what we call from the point of wonder. So instead of saying, I need an artist to help me communicate X, which might sound like an assignment coming from above, you might say instead, I have this question, this hunch, this problem, would you explore it with me? And then you can be coming to this collaboration as co-equal researchers with a common quest. You could also want to think about inventing programming principles, which I'll talk about in a second, and think about working ecosystemically, meaning think of ways that the lions can be lions, the bears can be bears, and we can all work together to make climate change communication ecosystemically work. Let's see, next slide. So, for example, not all of us can be Leonardos or Audubons, and scientists and artists in the same person. Most of us mortals are on the side of one side of the art-science continuum or the other. Some scientists have a deep and important need to maintain their objective stance with their science, which is totally understandable, and I'll just give you an example in nearly closing of an ecosystemic climate change communication program that we did that was really, really effective. It was a panel we called Hollywood and Climate Change. The panelists were a much respected film critic and one scientist each from NOAA, NCAR, and the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. And together in advance, we chose 10 Hollywood films, and they were that had anything to do with weather or climate. So it was like Waterworld, Wizard of Oz, The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, Day After Tomorrow. Films, and the format of the panel was that the film critic introduced the film, showed an excerpt from it, and then each scientist talked or explained what's Hollywood science, what's real science, what couldn't happen, what could. I was the panel moderator, and I asked who the audience was. It was a completely sold-out crowd, and it was almost exactly a quarter art folks, because it was held at an art museum, a quarter film followers, a quarter science people, and a quarter miscellaneous. It was an incredibly lively discussion. We couldn't get people to leave. And again, it brought all of these different people from the ecosystem, these different species, to come together and have a really deep and meaningful kind of discussion. So lastly, in co-creating art and science projects, or ways of communicating climate change in the most effective ways, we found it's very helpful to develop programming principles or a list of shared values. And these are the ones that we've developed, but everybody can develop their own principles. Artistic excellence, scientific accuracy, environmental effectiveness, ethical practice, the middle way has been absolutely critical for us, and hard too, because it's so tempting to take a more activist kind of stance, but we've found that it's really important to reach the greatest number of people to be as nonpartisan or bipartisan as we possibly can be. And the last one is to have an open, listening, generous, and compassionate heart, which is perhaps the very hardest thing to do and probably the most important when listening to and really trying to hear the people that you're trying to communicate to, people whose opinions are different from your own. And if all else fails in communicating climate change, there's always prayer. So that's and last, and this is just a slide of one of our posters and all of the folks that we've collaborated with, and, you know, as many as 25, which I do not recommend. It's way too many. And that's the end. And big apologies for our website. It's getting redone. It's terribly out of date, so that's all. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much, Marta. In your company, Eco Arts Connections, is your role organizing these partners for these events? Is that what you mainly do, or is there some other role that your company plays?
I do lots of different things, and I've sort of developed a new word for myself for what I do, which is a quickener, meaning to quicken, to give life to. So in some cases, directly answering your question, I do bring different organizations together, and that's what I'm doing in Indianapolis at the invitation of Mary Miss, the Dots artist that you saw. And so we have 12 now different organizations, the zoo, the art museum, the State Historical Museum, the park, that's just tons of them, Butler Center for Urban Ecology, who are looking at a focal point, which in this case is the White River, and how sustainability on the White River might happen. In some cases, I just consult. In other cases, I work very directly pairing artists and scientists to figure out ways that they could work together. In with the American Meteorological Society, at the invitation of Peggy Lamone, I helped put together an art science exhibit that's called Forecast, Communicating Weather and Climate. And so in that case, there's going to be an exhibit that will be a visual art exhibit at their annual convention in Seattle in January. And half of the artists, the 30 or so artists selected, accepted our invitation of working with scientists to co-create new pieces for the show. And so I helped facilitate that. And that will be seen by not only the 3,000 or so AMS attendees, but also 200,000 people who will be going to the Washington State Convention Center for a three-month time period when the exhibit is up. So it's a lot of what I do is connecting people.
Mm-hmm. Where is this exhibit going to be?
It's going to be
at AMS?
At AMS at the Washington State Convention Center, which is where they're having their conference, if anybody's going.
Camera.
Or, for example, we had this amazing thing where Chris Jordan, the guy who does the bottles and the paper images that I showed,
mm-hmm.
just came to Boulder, and we've commissioned him to do a new work that will be visualizing carbon emissions. So, it's going to be really interesting. So we suggested that he come and talk to the UCAR, University Corporation of Atmospheric Research, and 50th anniversary forum, and so he gave the keynote presentation for that, and then we've paired him with scientists at NOAA and NCAR to help him figure out how he might best, ways of visualizing carbon.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we don't know what's going to happen with that, but we're really hoping good things. So it's really across the board.
Did somebody else have a question? I know somebody said something that's gone past.
This is Doug Cohen. Thank you so much for your presentation. I'm assuming that Martin knows about this. I just want to bring to the group's awareness a few things at the intersection of the arts and climate change. One is Cape Farewell, which is a British organization that brings scientists and artists on expeditions, for example, up to the polar regions, and they just came back from one just recently. They have the 350 artist Kevin Buckland on the boat this time. Actually, he happens to be the nephew of David Buckland, the founder of Cape Farewell. So for 9 years, he's doing work on arts and culture and climate change, capefarewell.org. Also, they had a link in the Cape Farewell site just this week to a youth expedition to China that was getting ready for a presentation to the COP in Mexico. That was a expedition having to do with a proposal for climate finance, and the basic concept there is to mobilize $1 trillion for addressing climate change mitigation and adaptation. And the last thing I'll mention is a playwright in Santa Fe, New Mexico, named Doug Stewart. Doug Stewart has written a play that's available to communities to self-produce, which is on Mother Earth versus the people of the world around climate change. So there's community engagement through the arts through this play. That's a wonderful resource, and self, you know, you don't need to be a professional troupe to put it on.
Great. Yeah, there's also, if people are interested, if you Google Tipping Point UK, there's an organization that's based in London that for the past 5 years, as I was mentioning, has brought together artists and scientists around climate change and sustainability, which is really terrific. And the British are way ahead of us here in the United States in terms of this art, science, climate change, sustainability combination. They're quite stellar, and the British Council as well has been supporting a lot of this work.
Hi, this is Joe, and I'm anxious to see in Seattle the artwork going up, and I'd be very anxious to see what Chris Jordan does, because as you all know, the visualization of CO2 is one of our biggest problems, as Andy Redkin has pointed out a number of times.
Exactly. Andy supposedly said, I didn't hear this, but he supposedly said that you know, considering the fact that hardly anybody reads anymore, images are really the way to go. So, that was really interesting.
No. But then, did you see that the recent article in the Times about young parents not buying picture books anymore because they want all their children to read?
Oh, my God. Amazing. Yeah.
It's sad. Marta, this is Caroline Lewis. I'm an educator, and I have to tell you, I am extremely impressed with what you're doing, and I am so glad you're doing it at a high professional level. I'm presenting to the group in November, and a lot of interdisciplinary work as well, but at a much lower level, in engaging more middle and high school kids and tons of teachers. But I just can't thank you enough for trying to get the affective domain heightened, because it's yelling at them isn't working, and expecting them to get logic isn't working, and common sense is uncommon, but feeling is feeling, you know, and experiencing
feeling is feeling. Mm-hmm.
And experiencing is experiencing. So good for you, and thank you for sharing
you.
That.
Yeah, one of the things that we're trying to figure out now is, if you take the six Americas, what music do you think each one of those demographic, you know, segments might listen to, and which artists, you know, what kinds of plays, or what kinds of, you know, trying to figure out, so that can we then, we're working on a Tipping Point meeting in Colorado in 2011, hopefully, and to bring together, you know, the most unbelievable climate scientists and the most incredible artists of all disciplines, so that, with the idea that if this artist created a song or a play or whatever it would be, the quality would be so high, and the likelihood of reaching, you know, millions of people would be quite strong. And so if any of you want to play this little game, it's not really a game, it's actually critical. but what you think about, you know, with the Six Americas, please let me know and nominate artists, you know, to come to this meeting. It would be very helpful.
Good idea.
When is that meeting again?
We don't know yet. We're waiting for NSF.
I see. Well, I actually have a question for you. So this is actually much more timely. We have at the University of Massachusetts Lowell, they're going to have a climate change teach-in on Friday, this Friday.
Oh, wow.
And it's free and for anybody to come. And it really is, there's a series of speakers, and I won't go into it now, but there's a rather unique way in terms of engaging the audience in conversation, addressing the speakers, actually put out a series of questions that then breakout groups of the people who participate come discuss for a period of time, and that's going to be all captured. So my question to you is, are there artists that we might think about encouraging who are in the New England area in Massachusetts that might come to this to bring that voice to that discussion?
It's Friday?
It's Friday the 15th, yes.
I don't know if I could, yeah.
I mean, I understand that it's short notice, but if there's people that you know that might, we might,
absolutely.
I can send you the link, and so that you can see where it is.
Yeah, and I'll try.
Because this is actually, they had planned this teach-in, and it is going to be part of their NASA Global Climate Change Education Project, but they actually had planned this before they knew that was going to be funded. We just found out that it was going to be funded a few weeks ago.
I totally understand.
So all of a sudden, we know now we're going to have at least three more years.
Right.
So it would be having this conversation now, we might be able to integrate them into the kind of program that the whole project has developed, which actually has a much broader outreach, starting from the university students and branching out to high school students and then having them communicate to the broader community. But the teach-in is one component of that that is actually occurring this Friday.
Wow, yeah, if you can send me, that would be really helpful.
Okay.
Let me give you my personal email because I'm you know, dying from email overdose right now.
Okay.
You can just get it to me. It's info.ecoarts, ECOARTS, @gmail.com.
Okay.
That would be great. And the same thing for, was it Doug or Joe? I can't remember who it was.
Doug Cohen?
The other, yeah, the other email. I'm not sure who it was, but.
Oh, okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah, that would be really, for the Washington thing, that's what it was, yeah.
Yes.
That would
yeah.
be great. Yeah, because and just so that you know, and I have to leave exactly at 12 just because of I have another talk I have to give, but but one of the things that's really interesting to me in working with the artists is there's a really, there's nervousness in the arts community when you go to them, talk to them about working on climate change. And it's mostly twofold. First is the whole idea of working on assignment. It's like, I've just recently found out about the nervousness between scientists and industry. Coming, you know, as an arts person, you know, that the nervousness about being hired by somebody and that you would, that somehow you wouldn't be able to express your ideas freely.
Right.
I don't know if you know about this, but in the arts, it's you know, because you know, it gets into advertising or propaganda, or, you know, so there's a nervousness there. So just to be aware of that. And I always like tell people that, you know, in the first centuries, the Christian Church was the great assigner of topics. And, you know, many of the people whom we think of as our great artists, like, you know, Michelangelo and Da Vinci and Beethoven and Bach and Mozart, they all worked on assignment. And their work was great, and because part of the difficulty about working on assignment too is people feel like, artists feel like there's really a lot of work out there, and they're absolutely right, that really stinks aesthetically as art. It might work as community activism, but it doesn't work as art. And so really great artists are very shy of working on this topic. And so that's, there's that little difficulty right there. And the other thing that I was going to tell you is that a lot of times artists feel like they can't find a way in to climate change as a topic. It's just too huge.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to help them think about, you know, an example that I love to give is, you know, think about the Kyoto Protocol and think, or Copenhagen, you know, matter. You know, like, what are the behind-the-scenes stories of power and greed and, you know, lust and God knows what else has gone mm-hmm. on behind the closed doors that made it so that those agreements are not happening? You know, what are the human stories that people could talk about? And then going back also again to, you know, the Christian Church and its assignments is Michelangelo, when he was painting the Sistine Chapel, his assignment was painting the 12 apostles, and instead he chose the topic creation. Now, that's a big topic, and he figured out a way in. So a lot of times, again, working with artists, is you really have to try to figure out what's the human story behind it. Because I feel like if we can inspire our artists with good science to then inspire the world, it
mm-hmm.
would be very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Okay, are there any other questions or comments for Marta?
Thank you very much.
This is Martha Shaw from Earth Advertising. Thank you so much. It's been
thank you.
Great presentation.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
Marta, that was
great. We've recorded this, and Marta, we'll have to figure out a way so that we can actually post your slides on the website and not just have the connection to the slide share. So we'll talk about that offline.
That sounds great.
So that everybody can, but right now you can still link to it. I'm hoping, do you know how long this link will last?
I don't have any idea.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
Well, we'll leave the link there for now, and Scott will, as soon as he can, post the recording. So anybody else who, or if you want to listen to pieces of it again, you'll be able to do that. Okay, so if there are no other questions, we will plan to talk again next week.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very
thanks
much.
Everyone.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Bye. Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks.
Yeah.
Bye.